You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 95 of Take a Bow. I'm your host, Eli Tokash, and this week we have another incredible episode for you all today. We have Broadway star Will Swenson on the podcast today, and he talks about so many different things that's happening right now for him. Before we get to the episode, as always, let's just talk about some Broadway news. Assassins off-Broadway cast at the Signature Theater, they had the production, I went and saw it, it was great. They are releasing a cast album on Friday, March 18th. So if you're listening to this on Thursday, March 17th, the day that this comes out, the Assassins off-Broadway cast featuring Ethan Slater, Judy Kuhn, now Will Swenson, they're having a cast album that comes out tomorrow if you're listening to this on March 17th. And for those of you not listening to it, it may be out already, and or it's out today. So March 17th, this Friday, go check it out. I promise you, you won't regret it. It's got some great stuff. There's some exciting news from the Take a Bow family where John Bolton, who has been on the podcast before, he was my dad in A Christmas Story. He's joining the Wicked Tour as the Wizard of Oz. So very exciting stuff for John Bolton. I can't only imagine how good John Bolton is going to be in the Wicked Tour as the Wizard of Oz. So exciting. Iconic role. Speaking of tours, the Waitress Tour announced their cast, where Stephanie Torrance is actually going to be leading the cast. It's a limited run of a tour, and Stephanie Torrance was the understudy on Broadway, and she is absolutely incredible. She's gotten rave reviews. So incredible cast at the Wicked and Waitress Tour. They're both going to be spectacular. I have to talk about some Hadestown here. So Hadestown is currently dealing with a bit of not a problem, but they're running into some obstacles regarding both COVID and injuries. A couple weeks ago, I mentioned that Amber Gray was leaving Hadestown. And if you happen to be listening to this today and you saw Amber Gray this week and you may be like, oh, I thought she wasn't in the show. Well, they had to bring her back. And she's been doing pop-in performances for Hadestown as Persephone. Craziness. She just was literally able to just step right back into the role, didn't miss a beat, and kind of save the show because they actually had to cancel a couple performances, and especially the performances that she couldn't be there for. So when she's been able to save the show multiple times within this past week, and it's just amazing that Amber Gray is back in Hadestown. And if you're one of the lucky audience members that got that little surprise, I am so jealous of you. That's incredible. I heard it was just absolutely electric, and it was just such a joy to see her in the show again. This person is in the news almost every week because I love her so much. Ariana DeBose won a Critics' Choice Awards for her performance as Anita in West Side Story. So exciting. She's won so many awards and has been nominated so many times for her incredible performance in West Side Story that she just deserves it all. And it's so, so cool to see West Side Story and a movie musical to be recognized the way it's getting. The recognition that West Side Story is getting is just so exciting to see. I always mention that, but truly, I mean it. Congratulations, Ariana. And for those of you who haven't seen it yet, go check it out on Disney Plus or HBO Max, because West Side Story is just, it's a classic. And this reimagined version of it and this newer version of it is just so brilliant. And everyone's performance in it is just incredible. Mike Feist was actually trending on Twitter, which that takes a lot. Literally the day it came out on Disney Plus and HBO Max, about how he should be nominated and he's not getting the recognition that he deserves for his performance in this musical. So a bunch of theater people are getting the recognition that they deserve, and it's just so exciting to see. So I can't wait to see the future of Ariana DeBose and Mike Feist. So exciting. And one last thing for this week's news section of Take a Bow, I just have to give credit to the amazing producers and production company of The Minutes that is currently on Broadway, featuring, you know, Jesse Mueller and Danny McCarthy, Sally Murphy, Blair Brown, all of these incredible people, Noah Reed. The Minutes is currently on Broadway, and they have announced that they are donating a portion of ticket sales to Save the Children's Ukraine Crisis Relief Fund. That is just incredible, and I really hope that a lot of productions and producers take note of this and they begin to do the same thing, because I understand that right now is a hard time for Broadway and they've missed out on a couple years and they're just trying to recoup, but there are people in Ukraine and around the world that are struggling way more than producers on Broadway or actors or anyone. I mean, people are literally being torn away from their families up in Ukraine, and what they're doing here to help that organization and to help the people of Ukraine that are facing these challenges are just incredible. And Jeffrey Richards and Rebecca Gold, who are the producers, made a statement and said, "On behalf of our fellow producers, Tracy, Anna, and the entire company, we take this step in support of the men, women, and children affected by the unfolding humanitarian crises in Ukraine." So just incredible work. And truly, I'm going to say it again. I really hope that producers and productions, they take note of this and they consider doing the same thing. And for those of you at home listening, and you're able to do the same and donate and support, you could either go get a ticket to the Minutes to go see that on Broadway, or you could check out the Ukraine Crisis Relief Fund, which can be found at savethechildren.org. So please go check that out, and bravo to the Minutes, because that's really incredible what you're doing. So that wraps this week's segment for the news of Take a Bow. So without further ado, everyone, welcome to Take a Bow, Will Swenson. Will Swenson, curtain up. Okay, today we welcome arguably the most dynamic actor on Broadway. He has been in 8 Broadway shows, which is soon to be 9. This Tony nominee just appeared in the Signature Theater's production of Assassins and will soon be back on Broadway in A Beautiful Noise, the Neil Diamond musical. Everyone, welcome to Take a Bow, Will Swenson.
Yay!
Yeah! Oh my gosh.
This is the Frog Boys. Yay!
I love it. It's amazing. There you go. That's your next role. well, thank you for coming on today. I'm very excited to talk to you about all the things. The way I usually like to start my episodes is I like to ask my guests, what got them into theater? What made you want to tell stories and be an entertainer?
I had no choice. I grew up in a theatrical family. My grandmother, who was born in 1908, I think, was just drawn to the theater, and she became a playwright and started a theater in Glendale, California in the 40s, and just started doing her own plays because she couldn't afford royalties, and then the theater, you know, did better, and so then my mom, you know, was in plays, and then they put me in plays, so I got thrown on stage when I was literally 2 years old, and
wow,
and I've kind of been just doing it ever since.
So you're from California?
I grew up in California till I was 12. And okay. Then my family moved to Utah, where we started our own theater.
Wow.
And now my brother runs a theater in Utah. Yeah.
Wow. That's kind incredible.
Family business. Kind of wild.
So when you came to New York, was it to be on Broadway, like for your first show, or did you move before that?
It totally was. I mean, I went to school in Utah and then got my Equity card. I auditioned while at school. I auditioned for Disney World and got
yes,
a, doing the Beauty and the Beast show at Disney World. So right. I got my Equity card and I was down there for a couple of years, and then I got a tour, and then my first wife and I discovered that we were pregnant. We were like, let's not drag a child around the country on tour. Let's move to the city with all of this one or two credits that I've got. Surely things will go great. we moved to the city, definitely with the hope and expectation of me being able to make it on Broadway, but it took a minute.
Yeah, well, I mean, it worked out, so that's good. In the end, yeah. Well, talk to me about your Broadway debut, which was in Brooklyn.
Yeah.
What was it like to be on a Broadway stage for the first time?
Well, it was amazing. I mean, when I got cast in my first show, they cast me in the room, which they never do. I've never been cast in the room once other than my Broadway debut. And I'd been kicking around town for about 4 years and stressing out. And I'd had a baby by then and just thinking I'm never going to make it. And I was pregnant with my second child and they cast me in the room. So I walked out and got downstairs at the elevator at Chelsea Studios and just bawled on 26th.
Oh, wow.
But doing the show was amazing, although I was hired to be a pit singer / understudy. There are only 2 gentlemen in that production. It's only 5 people in the whole show.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was hired to cover Clavant Derricks, who was a 55-year-old, 6'4" black man.
And, oh my God.
And then Kevin Anderson was the white dude that I was a little closer to, but not really close in type to either one of them. At any rate, they had converted, it was then called the Plymouth Theater, which I think is called the Schoenfeld Theater now. And the pit singers were put literally in the offstage bathroom.
Oh my God.
This little tiny anteroom, but I'm not kidding you, it was maybe 6 feet by 6 feet big. Just, we were just like crunched in there, four of us,
yes,
singing the background vocals.
That is for amazing. The show.
And we did get to go out and bow at the end of the show, but it was so bizarre because we kind of went out with the band that also was not on stage.
Mm-hmm.
So we would pop out and the audience would kind of go, I guess they're with the band. And so it wasn't the fulfilling, you know, center stage curtain call that, you know, one sure. imagines when one's dreaming about making their Broadway debut. It was more of a hello. But I mean, my dream was as fulfilled as it would have been otherwise. I was so desperate to get to check that box off the list. I had been on Broadway.
Right.
One night, but I did it. So
that's amazing. And now, and then it just kept rolling from there. No,
oh my goodness. Thank goodness.
So like I mentioned earlier, I mean, you most recently were in Assassins, and it was crazy for me to go see that because the last show I saw you in was Earl in Waitress.
Oh yeah.
And I was just like, these roles are so vastly different. It's insane. And then I looked up what other shows that you've done and everything, and all of your roles are just so diverse, and none of them are like any of the others. Like, what would you like consider yourself? Or would you be a comedy actor, a comedic actor, or would you be a dramatic actor?
I love that you have to ask that question. That's kind of been my goal.
Yeah.
Is to be that guy that nobody can kind of pigeonhole and say, oh, he does this, let's get Will Swenson, or he's that guy.
Yeah.
My agent, I think he says you're a character man in a leading man's body is what he said.
Wow.
it's
very true.
I like that. I like that. Yeah. Yeah. The fact that anyone would think of me to play Gitto,
right,
is a huge compliment, I think. I think I started out in the business and people were like, all right, well, he can be the rocker or he can be the stoner or the abusive guy. And, you know, granted, I have been cast as those guys quite a little bit, the hippie, but I've tried really hard to play against that idea and show that I can do lots of other things and hopefully not get pigeonholed as to being only able to do one thing.
Yeah, because I'm literally like, you take Assassins, you take Waitress, you take, and now the Neil Diamond show, like Priscilla, Queen of the Desert, like none of them are like the same thing. And it was just like, it's amazing. So that I love that you don't want to like pigeonhole yourself to anything.
Oh, that's cool. The fun of it, right? That's why yeah. we do this. I mean, I think some people enjoy doing the one thing over and over again and they're really great at it and that's awesome, but that's super not for me. I mean,
the challenge.
Exactly. The whole thing that appeals to me is disappearing into a whole other character, a whole other psyche, yeah. discovering these awful compartments of our emotional makeup that we would never be able to express in real life, but be able to get out these awful things on stage. Like that's the fun for me.
Totally. So speaking of Assassins, you guys recorded a cast album,
yeah.
which comes out this Friday, March 18th. Very exciting. What are you most excited for people to hear in this cast album compared to the others?
The orchestrations is yeah. my answer to that.
Interesting.
They're brand new orchestrations. Our music director, Greg Jarrett, with the blessing of Stephen Sondheim, did these amazing new orchestrations. And it's no comment on the old ones at all. Mm-hmm. But because John Doyle, our director, likes to put the band in his shows quite a little bit. Half of our cast were musicians also.
Yeah.
And the idea behind the orchestrations was to kind of try to capture that sense of Americana that Sondheim wrote toward in his music. Like everybody's song sort of reflects the musical genre of the time in which they lived.
Mm-hmm.
So there's like, you know, there's the folk songs and the fiddle songs and bluegrass songs and like vaudeville songs and then up into like 80s pop with John Hinckley. And so it's a pretty wide range of musical styles, but just all encapsulated in the Americana idea, which the show is kind of about is America's identity and who we are and how entitled we are for that matter.
Right.
But I think the orchestrations are just super masterful and beautiful, and I can't wait for folks to hear Assassins through just with the altered lens of these orchestrations.
Absolutely.
Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUFS creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUFS, the original new musical from Shayna Taub, is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at SUFSmusical.com. The Outsiders on Broadway tells the story of finding where you belong when the world refuses to accept you. Based on S.E. Hinton's beloved novel, featuring new music from Jamestown Revival and Justin Levine, and directed by Danya Taymor, Entertainment Weekly says that, with brilliant staging and some of the most captivating stage fighting currently on Broadway, The Outsiders has the power to inspire an entire generation. Get your tickets today at OutsidersMusical.com.
So I have to ask, because I've only seen that version of Assassin. So like, I literally can't imagine it done any other way with the performers playing the instruments. Uh-huh. On the album, are they performing the instruments?
Yeah, they're the guys.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Yeah, for those that didn't get to see the show, our production had four actor musicians that, you know, sang and acted in the show, but also played part of the orchestrations. And then up above the stage, we had three just full-time musicians, our music director on keys, and then bass and drums upstairs. So mm-hmm. It was that exact same group of folks for the cast recording.
That's amazing. Yeah. So fascinating. I love
the fact that those guys can do what they did. I can't even tell you. Like, it's hard enough for me to like walk and sing at the same time. Right. And these guys were doing choreography while sometimes singing and playing and often playing music, multiple instruments. It right. was insanity what those guys can do.
Oh, it's amazing. It made the show, truly. Like, it was just so enjoyable to like watch that and just watch the live music right there on stage. You don't have to look up or look into the orchestra or something to see that.
Yeah, nice privilege to have the music with you right on stage as well.
Oh, I bet. Yeah. You could hear it better, yeah?
Yeah, well, and a challenge because the two groups of musicians were apart from one another. So that became challenging sometimes because the music director was up behind us and we didn't even see him, not even on a monitor. So we sort of just had to mentally lock in with what we were going to do and set some things pretty rigidly so that the tempos could work
right
each time we got there. But so there were pluses and minuses to the staging arrangement.
Totally. Well, when was this recorded? Because I know Assassin's run got shut down a little bit early because of a COVID. Was it afterwards or was it during?
That was after. We were supposed to run to the end of January, and I think we only had to cut off 1 week. We had to cancel our last week because we all got COVID. And then we recorded.
You too?
I did too, yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I think about half our cast had it before, so they didn't get it again.
Got it.
Shut down. We only missed, I think, one show, maybe two shows prior to that, because Omicron was just racing through the city of New York.
Literally.
We were so cautious and careful. Anyway, it got in at the end. And then the other
a good half. Time to get in. At yeah. least you don't have to cancel the whole run.
Yeah, at least it was only 1 week. And then we recorded it about a month later.
Okay.
Not even a month. It was like the beginning of March, I think. This is the beginning of March. We must have done it pretty quick. I think we must have done it at the beginning of February then.
Interesting. Well, it's good that like, I mean, it sucks that you guys didn't know that you were having your last show or you didn't have your last show like properly, but you were able to like almost have a last show or a second go at it in the recording studio, which is really cool.
Super nice. Super nice to get a little bit of closure.
Yeah, for sure. I have to talk to you about Waitress, and I have to talk to you about your performance in that, because Waitress is actually one of my favorite shows on Broadway. Yeah, literally. I was so excited when they brought it back and everything. Talk to me about your experience in that and just what it was like to play Earl and kind of go there every night, 8 shows a week.
Waitress is such a cool show. It's so, I love it because it's messy.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, there are archetypes in it. There's the heroine that you root for, and there's a kind of bad guy, and then there's, you know, kind of a hero. But they're all not, they're not 100% those things. Like, Jenna is messed up and making bad decisions.
Right.
And, you know, the typical hero, he's also, he's having an affair with a married brown right. woman. Like, that's messy. And my character, right. Earl, like, you know, he could be seen as just this villain, but he's also just like sad and lonely and unfulfilled and unable to communicate his pain. And like, it's just, it's so not clear cut. Everybody's got real struggles that they're dealing with. And because of that, I think everyone in the audience recognizes themselves in a portion of it. It's just really relatable. Everybody's struggling to get where they're going. It's not cookie cutter theater.
Totally. Yeah. What was it like to perform with, I mean, you performed with so many incredible leading ladies and you played opposite of them. But Sarah Bareilles, like, she literally wrote the show. Like, was there ever added pressure because it was like, oh, you wrote it, I hope I'm doing it just? Like,
oh, it's funny that you say that, because I don't think I ever felt intimidation from Sarah ever.
Wow.
And
that's great.
I think just about any other composer, like if I was doing the show with a composer, I think I would feel completely, I'm trying to envision doing the show with if Michael John Lacusa was a performer, I would be like terrified to perform with Michael John, even though
sure.
he's the greatest guy. But Sarah's like the last person to ever be judgy. I just, no, there was, it was never anything but complete support, and she was so complimentary about my take on the role. And
wow,
honestly, I think she was, our roles were reversed maybe a little bit. She was quite nervous coming into to be the performer, because I think, you know, she at the time, I think, felt like her sweet spot was writing, which let's
be honest,
let's do
yeah,
incredible songwriter, one of my favorites before I ever met her. So I think she was nervous to try something else out and be under the Broadway scrutiny spotlight, you know?
Sure.
And she had no need to worry. She just, like, Sarah's like a truth seeking missile. She just, like, she can't lie. I don't think she can lie in life, and I just certainly can't lie on stage.
Wow.
She just was a natural. I was so mad at her. I was like, you've never taken an acting class in your life. This is what she's just completely honest and completely flexible and different every night. Like that,
right.
that level that you hope to get to with some of the greatest actors, where it's a real, you know, tennis exchange of back and forth. She just inherently immediately had, she was just the loveliest. Couldn't have asked for a better scene partner. And now that you've pointed it out, the fact that she could have had an energy of
yeah
is that was never there is just an added bonus.
That's amazing. I have to say, I'm a little embarrassed to share this, but I just have to, because I loved it so much. I came home, I thought it was Sarah's story, and I had no idea. I was like, this new musical about Sarah Bareilles is amazing, it's called Waitress. And I was telling my parents about it, and my mom was like, there's a movie called Waitress that's exactly that story. And I was like, what? I was like, dear Lord. So I thought, because I hadn't seen Jesse Mueller or anything. So when I first saw it, it was Sarah Bareilles. And I was like, oh, she's like reliving her life on stage 8 shows a week. That's insane. Like, and I was just like, I got humbled really quickly. I have to talk about working with Diane Paulus, because I always have to shout her out when I talk to someone that's worked with her, because I know what it's like working with her. And she truly brings out like the best in all of her performers that she directs. So what was it like to work with her, and how much did she help you, you know, really find yourself in Earl?
I mean, Diane's the best. It was my second time working with her for Waitress. So mm-hmm. We already kind of had a vocabulary, so to speak.
Sure.
So we could, you know, we could skip some of the niceties of discussing things and just kind of talk it out. I mean, I think Diane's great at sort of encouraging you, almost forcing you to create a big backstory.
Yes.
like, you know, as you might know, you know, in the process of working up her show, she often has her casts do a whole presentation about your character and like a big homework assignment. And it's really daunting and it is super challenging, but what it does is it creates a whole universe for everybody that a whole backstory and a whole community, that goes a long way on stage. So knowing that that's the kind of thing that Diane was going to want me to have prepared, I did do a lot of kind of thinking about Earl and why he got to where he was and how somebody becomes like that. And my mm-hmm. process is different, I think, for just about every show I do. But this one, I was like, well, it's an ugly truth, but people do abuse their partners and it's right. awful. And they're real people. So YouTube is like this amazing tool that we have now that actors didn't used to have. But I went down the rabbit hole of just like watching, you know, I started by watching sort of talk shows where women were saying that they were in abusive relationships and then they'd bring on the husband. And, you know, if it was like a Jerry Springer show, you know, it's, they're playing to type and they're, you know, they would only bring in people that were going to be these caricatures of abusers. But right. on other shows, like a Dr. Phil kind of show, you know, in walks this completely normal dude who's not mm-hmm. raising right now. And he's just like, I know it's terrible and I do lose my temper, but that doesn't mean that I don't love you. And just like speaking completely earnestly. And it's like, okay, this is a guy that has beat the crap out of his wife and he's completely normal and he's completely justified. He thinks he's completely justified in his complaints.
Right.
He allows himself to take it to this level. And it's just sort of sad and terrifying. And, so, I mean, to go back to your question about Diane, She just inspires you to do a whole lot of homework and know who your person is so that you can be relatively loose on stage and plug in your homework to where the text supports that. And it's always just great to work with somebody that you worked with before and know that you have a good relationship with them and
right.
things are most likely going to go well. And they did.
Yeah, for sure. it's interesting because like working with Diane, I've never had an experience like that, especially those presentations that you're talking about. I had never even thought to do something like that for a character, especially like the first time that I did that was with her was in Pippin. And I was just playing Theo and it's just like, you know, he has like a tiny role, you know, like it's not very in depth or anything like that. But when she really was like, no, I mean, he's still a person. He has to have like a backstory and he has to do all these things. And I was like, this is insane. Like I would have never thought of this. And then like doing that work for auditions and for any other roles that I did in the future, she taught me how to find that and mm-hmm. to find that story and to really, and finding that story made it come to life on the stage in a way that just wouldn't have happened if I did it any other way. Uh-huh. So yeah. It's just fascinating. She really helped me a lot in becoming the performer I am today. So I always shout her out when
nice.
People work with her. Nice. I need to talk to you about hair. First of all, you have a lovely set of hair on you right now. but yes, thank you. So hair is, you got a Tony nomination for it. You are a Tony nominated performer. And talk to me about that experience. I mean, once again, it's a show that's completely different to all of the things. It's just a hippie show and you're nominated for a Tony. Like, what was that like for you and being nominated and doing the show and all the things?
I mean, it was great. We all have that one show that sort of just like sits on top of the rest of them and just like,
yeah,
like, oh, that was the top of the mountain. And for me this far, I probably would say that hair is the one. I'm still just the closest with those cast members. We have a text thread with our whole cast on it that lights up at least 3 times a week. Everybody just loves each other. And it was just special. It went through different incarnations. And some folks came in and out, and then in again and out again. And, it's one of those shows that you have to sort of buy into the idea of it to make it work.
Mm-hmm.
Like you have to walk the walk of hair in order to perform hair.
Sure.
So you have to really become a tribe if you want to do that show. So I inherited just all of my best friends, and to that point, you know, the pinnacle of my performing career, and to get to do something that loose, like my favorite thing is, you know, the elasticity of a show or a role. Like I love to make things as different as I can within the limits of the structure of the show.
Sure.
From night to night, and have gotten in trouble a time or two because of my love of that. But Hair facilitated that and encouraged it. And, you know, that was our currency, was making it something completely different every night. So because that's the magic of theater, and in that instance, taken to the extreme of what a performance could be, what a different night, how that can vary from the night before, it was just, oh, it's just heaven. It was so fun. And then to have it be a success and to be recognized by the industry, yeah, and other folks as being a production that other people responded to was, you know, just a icing on that cake.
Absolutely. It doesn't help that you're you know, playing around every night with goofballs like Josh Lehman and Matthew Morrison and all those guys. No, I love them so much, but they're so fun to work with, right? It just great. Like helps bring out some play on the stage, you know.
Great folks, just the best, and so silly. And
yeah,
the fact that we could goof around a bit and that was part of the fun was, you know, sometimes you'd never know what was going to happen from night to night.
Right.
And it was okay, but that was great. Yeah.
Totally. I can't, I love those guys so much. They're the funniest, especially Josh. He makes me crack up. Josh can say hi and it'll make me laugh. You know, like it's just one of those guys. But I have to ask you, Javert, you played Javert in Les Mis. I mean, literally probably one of the most iconic roles like on Broadway is just like anything in Les Mis, honestly. But Javert, like how cool was that for you to perform in that, in such an iconic show like that?
It was awesome. It was insanity. And honestly, I said to my wife the other day, I was like, you know, of all the shows I've ever done, when I look back on Les Mis, that one seems like the most impossible, like the biggest kind of dream. I sometimes can't wrap my head around the fact that I played Javert on Broadway.
Yeah,
I imagine that it's because I grew up with Les Mis and it was just really one of my more inspiring shows, where it was just like, I want to be up there. I want to be on the barricade.
Wow.
And I auditioned for it over and over when I was younger and just get called back over and over. And then I never booked it. And I think I'd given up hope of ever being in it, because all that was left for a guy my age was Javert and Valjean. And I was like, well, you know, that show's closed and I don't foresee them reviving it. And then they mm-hmm. did. And I went in and I got the part. I can't believe it. I still can't believe it.
Insane.
It was amazing. Yeah.
Did that kind of feel like your like Broadway debut moment, where it's just like, this is it, I'm doing it?
A little bit. I mean, as actors, we're all convinced that we're never going to work again after the next show closes.
Right.
Like, okay, well, I'm glad that I had a good run because I'm never going to work again.
Mm-hmm.
And to get a big role like that was thrilling, and to get that iconic of a role. And no, it was incredible. It, you know, yeah, it definitely, the curtain call for Les Mis certainly fulfilled the, void that Brooklyn might've set up.
Totally. I love that. You get your own bow, right?
Yeah.
It's nice. Well, I, it's just, there's so many things to talk about, especially like Javert to Priscilla, like all of these things. It just, I don't know. What's the difference, or for you, with a show like Les Mis, you have all of these blueprints. You know, it's a show that's been around for years and years. And you have shows like the Neil Diamond Show that you're about to do, and Waitress, and all these things where you're kind of originating roles. So talk to me about like doing a revival that has a blueprint that already has an existing performance compared to one that, you know, you are creating in the moment.
Yeah. I love creating. A new show for me is just candy. I love the rehearsal room, the feeling of creating something that's never existed before. That's the thrill for me. If I could get paid for rehearsing, I think that's probably what I would do, because I just,
oh my God,
so much fulfillment. Some people hate rehearsing, but like that's the magic for me. I just throwing stuff up to see what works and just being completely like, it has to be a safe room. Like, if it's, you know, if you feel intimidated or judged, you're not going to try stuff, and you're going to be embarrassed if you fail. But in the best of all possible worlds, your rehearsal room is like the safest place in the world. Everyone wants the show to be as good as it could possibly be. So you try these absurd, terrible things that sometimes fail. And, you know, I'd be horrified if that stuff made its way into the world. But once you lock into something and try something that works and make a new discovery, that's so fulfilling. And sure. To do that in a place where nothing existed before is true creation. And that's what just really turns me on. It's harder to find that in the rehearsal room for a revival or replacing somebody. Like if you're doing a revival, at least you have the luxury of saying, all right, well, this time we're going to look at it through this lens. It was told over here before. Now we're going to do this.
Right.
So, you know, if you're mounting a whole new revival, that's great. The hardest trick for me is in an already running show is the show. I liken it to like a runaway train. It's going to do what it's been set up to do. And you have to hit all of these marks. And sometimes emotional marks, sometimes physical marks that the whole mechanism around you needs you to hit, you know, in order to make the show go off. If I come in and decide that I want to do a backflip in this moment that wasn't there before, then, you know, clearly the show's not going to work as well.
Right.
And if, you know, and if I'm in a completely different emotional place than my co-star who's been doing the show with another performer and I come in and mess up that flow, that's kind of, you know, a bit of a left curve for them to have and an unfair one often. So that's the trickiest one. And the one where I feel like a puppet a little bit the most, because it's just like, okay, well, I'll say the words like you want me to, and I'll do the movements like you want me to. And it feels a little bit like you're not having as much input as you would like, which is why I love doing the new stuff.
Yeah. Well, when I hear you talk about how much you like love to play and everything, would you ever consider doing it from like a director's standpoint? Because I just feel like you'd be an amazing director.
Oh, thanks. I have directed and, you know, growing up in a theater family, I directed stuff. Most of the stuff that I've directed was when I was much, much younger, but I did love it. I feel like I get a little over control-y and I get so much fulfillment out of performing. I haven't really had that urge for a few years.
Interesting.
But I do like watching directors and seeing their different, you know, their different techniques, and some are very controlling and others let you fly a little bit more, and just discovering what works for me as an actor a little bit more, and taking pieces of the process and kind of going, that works for me. And then, you know, plugging that into the next role and seeing if that's a little more helpful.
Yeah, for sure. I've always been fascinated about directing, but I don't know if I would ever do it myself. I feel like it's a little intimidating, you know, just taking it from script and like putting it on a stage. It's amazing with how their brains work and all of that.
Right.
Yeah, seriously. So like I mentioned earlier, it was recently announced that you will be playing Neil Diamond on Broadway, which is like so cool. Sticking to this whole kind of dynamic about like replacing or reviving and originating. I mean, this is a very unique situation because you are creating Neil Diamond, but at the same time, like he's a real person. So like, how do you approach playing something like that?
That's the challenge, I guess. When I was doing Assassins, I was saying, I think this is the first real person that I've ever played that actually existed. And interesting that you sort of, that's a certain limiter of your choices. And now to be playing somebody who's actually exists and is still alive is another thing to consider. And then also just as a performer, he's a very specific thing. So the challenge will be to not make it a caricature, I guess.
Right.
But still honor the sound and the person. He's got an amazing life story and an amazing charisma and voice on stage. So we have done some workshops so far, and it's been a lot of fun discovering how to channel him and not be kind of a cartoon character version of Neil Diamond, but a real person.
Yeah, and also kind of making him yourself, you know, a little bit, finding you in him too is fascinating.
Sure.
I'm so excited to see it for sure. It's going out of town in Boston first, right?
Yep.
And then it's coming to Broadway in the summer.
We're going to Boston June and July, and then I believe back to Broadway after that.
Got it.
It'll either be in the fall, possibly the spring of next year.
Oh, okay. Interesting.
Yeah.
Because this was announced in like 2019. Like, I feel like before the pandemic that this was a thing in the works. So how long have you been associated with it?
Since then, we did some work on it, and then the pandemic hit and everybody's had to sit on their hands for a couple of years.
Wow.
And now that the things are clicking again, we were able to get moving on it, but
for sure.
It's a pretty exciting one.
Yeah. I mean, if you could sum up the show in like one word, what would it be?
One word?
Yeah. You could do two or three, I guess, but no more than three.
I don't know. Let's see. that's funny. Raw stage presence. I don't know.
Raw stage presence. Okay. That's fair. Hey, I'll take that. Is it going to be like, I don't know. I guess because I've seen Six now. I don't think I would have imagined this before, but like, you know, Six is that like concert feel. Is that kind of like what it's going to be, or is it more just his journey through life?
Oh my gosh, it's all of it. It's such a cool concept. I won't give away too much. Because it's too cool. But it's just told from a really emotional standpoint. It's written by the screenwriter Anthony McCartan. He wrote like the Bohemian Rhapsody movie and
right. He's
writing the Whitney Houston biopic now. And
amazing.
An awesome dude. And he hadn't written for the theater before, so he wrote this Neil Diamond musical without any kind of ideas about musical theater conventions or structure, mm-hmm. and which is great for creativity, but not necessarily great when you actually have to make set pieces and scene changes and but it's being directed by Michael Mayer, best in the business, and
yes.
and Movement by Stephen Hoggett, who's best in the business. Both just geniuses who have these huge, you know, caseloads of artistry to pull from, and they are able to take these ideas of Anthony's and put them on the stage in a way that you had never really thought of before. So structurally, it's different from any ideas you might have about a bio musical.
Sure.
It's definitely not just we're going to tell the life story of Neil Diamond, and now he's in concert, and now he's at home, and it's the furthest thing from that.
Okay.
Everything comes from a very emotional standpoint, and time isn't necessarily in order.
Mm-hmm.
It's just so cool. It's so cool.
I'm so excited. I'm so excited to see it. and once again, like, you have so many cool things coming out. Like, I'm excited for this, and then of course I'm excited for the Assassin's Cast album. So everyone go check that out on Friday, March 18th, or tomorrow if you're listening to this the day it comes out. But Will, this has been amazing. It was truly so much fun to meet you, and it was a great time. So I appreciate everything that you shared with us today.
Oh, equally here. Nice to talk to you, Eli. Best of luck with everything.
Oh, I appreciate that. Thank you. Take a bow, Will Swenson. I am so grateful that he was able to hop on this podcast and willing to do it and talk about so many amazing things that he's going on right now, like the Neil Diamond musical that he's currently working on and the Assassin's Cast recording, which is extremely exciting. So, and of course, the rest of his incredible career. Truly, what he had to say was so thought-provoking that he didn't really want to pigeonhole himself and didn't want to define who he was as a performer, and he can play both the protagonist and the villain. And it was fascinating just to talk to him and pick his brain about you know, how he goes about in finding ways to create a role but also keep it real and keep it true to a revival or to a real person or whatever it is. It was a great conversation. I really hope that you all enjoyed it, and we had a wonderful conversation afterwards, and he was just such a great guy and so nice. It was funny because I was only given a certain amount of time because he's doing a bunch of press junkets today, so afterwards he was late to his next press junket because we were talking so much afterwards, and I literally ended it right when he needed to leave, and then he was just like asking me about who, like, me and who I was, and it was just like so sweet. So big fan of Will Swenson, even bigger one after today. Everyone go check him out in all of his incredible shows. A Beautiful Noise, the Neil Diamond musical that is coming out, all of the things. Seriously, Will, thank you so much. It was a great, great chat. And hopefully we can do it again soon, because it was awesome. It was great talking to you. I want to talk about some Drama Dictionary Word of the Week. Let's do it. So this week's Drama Dictionary Word of the Week is actually going to be pit. And I know what you're thinking. My pits, like, hello, my armpit, all of these names, I'm telling you, they're so weird. We have buttons, we have pit, we have all these things, but they all have double meaning. So a pit in the theater industry, or the just like the entertainment industry in general, like whether you go to a concert or whatever, a pit is where the orchestra lives. So all of the giant instruments that are played, like a piano, the drums, these giant cellos, and all these things that you hear when you go to a Broadway, when you go to a live performance with music. That's a great way to sum it up, I think. When you go to a live performance with music, you're going to see a pit. And it's like, usually it's a little bit under the stage, but it also peeks out a little bit to where you can see the conductor, so that both the pit and the performers can see a conductor. Or if the performers don't need a conductor, usually like in concerts, the pit will be either in the back. It could be anywhere, honestly. Like in Dear Evan Hansen, it's like in the sky. It's on like another like level of the stage. So it's just a room, I guess, or an area where the musicians and their instruments live. And that's where they play from. So it's not quite their dressing room or anything, but that's what their stage, so to speak. So that's what a pit is. If you go to a Broadway show and you see, if you're like sitting front row and you see like the conductor, that's a pit. That's what you're, that's where he's living in. That's that area. And so you could be like, oh my God, hey conductor, you're in the pit. And he'll be like, yeah, I am. Anyways, that's a fun one for this week's Drama Dictionary Word of the Week. That about wraps up this week's episode. I want to say thank you so much for tuning in to this episode. If you haven't yet, check out our other episodes from this month, because it's been a great month for Take a Bow. It's truly been so much fun talking to Will Swenson, Kevin Chamberlain, and Annalise Garpacci. All of them are going to be, if not already, Broadway icons and stars. Truly, it's been such a great month, and I'm so excited. And we're going to be wrapping Women's History Month with a great episode that I'm excited to share with you all. And it's with a great, great guest, and a guest from a show that I have not yet had on. So that's that hint. As always, check us out on social media, on Instagram, on TikTok at Take a Bow Podcast. We are doing so much great content on TikTok, and we're pushing all of that content, and we have such a wonderful following. So I appreciate you all for following along. And if you aren't yet, please go do that, because it's worth it. That being said, if you don't have social media, or if you want to do more and check us out on Patreon at patreon.com/tab, and feel free to leave a review or a rating. It's free right here on whatever app and platform that you're listening to this podcast on, whether it's Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, iHeartRadio Podcasts, Google Podcasts, whatever it is, BPN, Broadway Podcast Network, do it all. I really appreciate you. And we have an exciting live event coming on April 18th. If you haven't yet, please go check it out. Buy your ticket. All tickets come with a $10 food and beverage voucher. So check it out, because it's going to be amazing, and it's going to have some wonderful, wonderful guests. And we are like a month away. We are literally a month away. Oh my God. And it's at 9:30 at the Green Moon 42. So you don't want to miss it. I've already got some guests lined up, and I'm excited to announce it. So stay tuned. And as always, I hope you enjoyed this week's episode, and I really hope to see you next week. Bye, everyone. Have a great week. For this episode's Curtain Call, I would like to recognize a few people who also deserve to take a bow. This podcast would not be possible without the help from Dory Berenstein, Brittany Bigelow, Katie Rosen, Alan Seals, and the team at the Broadway Podcast Network.
Next in line to take a bow is Tessie Tokash, who edits the audio and all the visuals for this podcast. A special thanks to patrons Brian Thompson, Pat McNamara, the listeners at PCC, as well as all of the other patrons for their continued support. If you're interested in becoming a patron, go to patreon.com/TAB. And if you enjoyed this week's episode, don't forget to subscribe on the platform that you're currently listening to this on. Also, feel free to give us a follow on Instagram at Take a Bow Podcast. Take a Bow's logo is designed by Giselle Bustos, and the music is by Nikki Torsha and Cormac Collinon. Bye, everyone. Hope to see you next week.
They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com. If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard.
So you were being crucified over here, but not there.
No. No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.